Save big money on everything at Menards. Take control of your outdoor space with Roundup, Weed, and Grass Killer. The Pump and Go container is ready and easy to use. With the Pump and Go sprayer, you don't need to mix your own liquid, and you get up to 10 minutes of continuous spray. Save big on Roundup, Weed, and Grass Killer. Plus, check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Hour number two of Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley.
That's me.
Joe Rexrode. That's not me. That's
Hi
you.
Hi there.
Ryan Poore taking you through
Hello.
This Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. All right, so we've spent a whole lot of time the last couple of days talking about the defense, deservedly so. It's the big problem right now with this Titans group. I'm of the opinion, Joe, right now, I just don't see where it's going to get a whole lot better from a pass rush standpoint. At this point, I'll just believe it when I see it. That's the position that I've taken with this defense. So with that being said, and with that being thrown out there as the way I view this defense, if you're Mike Vrabel, and you're Shane Bowen, and you're this coaching staff, how in the world do you go about fixing it if the pass rush that you thought you could get doesn't show up? How do you go about fixing this defense?
Well, last year they missed Adoree for some time. They missed Malcolm Butler for the second half of the year. They certainly had speed and coverage issues at corner. They could not get a four-man pass rush. They really didn't get much going there. You know, Landry would make some plays here and there. Jarrell Casey would make some plays, although, you know, he really had a quiet regular season. And yet, through all that, the stat that we've been talking about, 61% on pace to just destroy the NFL record, you know, last year they were at 36%. They were eighth in the NFL. Why? Well, clearly coaching had some kind of impact to compensate for the personnel, right? So that's what they've got to do. Just be Dean Pease, darn it, and figure it out. But really,
it's that easy.
I mean, look, the word coordination, again, like, and I'm not saying, I don't think Kevin Byard was trying to, like, send a little message like, you know, the coaching is all the problem. But because coordination can mean more than just the coaching aspect of it, it's all of it coming together. But, I mean, that's the job of that. That's the job of that person. And there isn't that person on this staff, by the way. But it's the job of Vrabel, of Shane Bowen, the whole staff to figure things out and to dial things up. Put players in position, try to confuse the opposition. I mean, I think in the Buffalo game, for example. So in that game, there were clearly some moments where Josh Allen was confused by the coverage. And one, that he threw a pick that was just unthinkable, right? And there were other moments in there where, like, even Jonathan Joseph is making plays. They were in a zone look, and he did a good job of reacting and got over, you know, and got a pass breakup. I mean, there were moments like that where it looked like if he didn't misunderstand the coverage, it at least gave the Titans enough time, you know, to figure things out, get some heat on them. Now, they still, again, they gave up 13 for 17, but that was a game where they didn't give up the points. They got turnovers. That's what you got to do. I mean, like Floyd said, and I've heard him say this before, too, and he's right. Like, what's the most important number? It's how many points did you give up?
Yeah.
Even, like, 27 is not disastrous. But to improve this defense, I still would go with individual players do better. But like you said, at what point do we say, when's that happening? We're probably about there, right?
We're getting close.
Yeah. Like, okay, when? I mean, Vic Beasley right now, I don't know. So – you are limited by that. But, again, they were limited last year, and they figured out a way to play pretty good defense in a lot of games. And so that staff has got to – some of it is just picking the right time, you know, to send something. And, again, is having a good plan and executing the plan. I mean, it's football, it's coaching, high-paid positions, and there's no way that it has gone well – on that aspect of it either. We don't know every single thing they talk about. We don't know every play call, every defensive call during a game, but the overall product tells you the story, and it's not good.
Mike Vrabel was asked yesterday in his Zoom press conference about what the defense can do to get to the quarterback, make him hold on to the ball a little bit longer. Here's what Vrabel had to say.
Yeah, Mike, when Ben's getting rid of the ball in just a fraction over 2 seconds on average yesterday, what are the things that you guys can coach defensively to try and get quarterbacks to hold onto the ball longer so that you can create those turnover opportunities?
Well, there's nothing that we can coach that's going to determine how long he holds the ball. But what we can do is continue to stress, you know, as we did and you saw sometimes yesterday, guys getting into the pocket, you know, or getting their hands up, you know, and then when the ball comes out quick, we're going to have to be able to tackle. You know, you're going to have to go, you know, be on them quick and tackle. And so sometimes we did that and sometimes we didn't.
So you hear that from Mike Vrabel there, and I agree with him from this standpoint. Like, Big Ben's been getting the ball out all year long. I think his average Sunday was, like, just barely over 2 seconds. I mean, he wasn't holding on the ball very long at all. And it's very difficult to generate an effective pass rush when you're doing that. But I feel like, I mean, there's also some adjustments you can make in the secondary to, hey, jam him up a little bit, make him hold on to the ball a little bit longer. And I didn't feel like the Titans – did a very good job of doing that on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I just think there were too many times where, yeah, absolutely, he got the ball out fast. It's hard to get there. Sometimes you look at lack of pass rush, lack of pressure, and it is related to scheme and the opposing quarterback not even letting you get to that point. But if that's what he's doing, then you can't play an off-coverage soft zone and let him get 8 yards every time. So, I mean, they're in a bind because – those are really good receivers they just played. They got more this weekend. And you don't feel comfortable manning up and you worry about the ball going over your head. But, I mean, I guess you look back at this game, again, Roethlisberger tried it twice and got picked both times. So I think you can look back at that particular matchup and game plan and say you should have been more aggressive with your coverage, even though you were having such trouble a lot with your coverage. I mean, I think you have to try to compensate somewhere for it.
You do, and now of course you see the reaction during the game on Sunday on social media, and this is not just I think a theme from this game. This has been a consistent theme really since the Buffalo game, where you've heard fans talking about, all right, the play calling defensively is Shane Bowen, Mike Vrabel, that combo, is that really the right combination to be doing this? Obviously, it's what they've elected to go with. Dean Pease in retirement, so it's not like you can just call him up and be like, hey, dude, how much we got to give you to come out of retirement? I mean, I guess you could, but that's not going to happen. So what can you do from that standpoint? Do you consider making a change at any point this year with somebody on staff, or do you just have to ride it out and hope that it gets better and you adjust better as you go along here? What do you do in that area?
Yeah, I mean, I think Vrabel is very involved, okay? So, yeah, I don't think there's a change to make. You know, I think the idea that it's just the play calling is the problem, I think that that's too simplistic. I mean, again, I think, you know, talk about Dean Pease all the time. Those guys, this is where it's so different, you know, covering a team now versus any other time, because you have conversations with people about things. That's another problem with evaluating this team right now. I mean, okay, what are they going to say on 8 minutes of Zoom call this week? Because that's what we'll get. And normally you have hours in a locker room. And in those hours in past years, a lot of talk about Dean Pease and like the weekly process of, you know, kind of showing guys, you know, this is what they do, this is why we are going to do what we do, own the game plan, okay? Now, look, these coaches that are in the staff room now, they know how that went. They worked with Dean Pease. So I'm sure they're trying to do a lot of the same things, but some people just have an incredible knack for things like that. And those players, especially like Byard, Logan Ryan, Wesley Woodyard, some guys who are gone now, some veterans who are gone now, and I'm sure are missed in some ways, they really appreciated how Dean Pease related to them and taught the game plan and talked the game and all that stuff. That's missed badly. So, like, you know, is it like a bad play call? You're going to change the play caller? I don't think that's it. What is the answer? I don't know. I mean, it's a work environment, and they got to figure out, you know, better plans, and they got to come up with better ideas. But the bottom line is, like, there's still, I think they know what's coming and what they need to do. Can you do it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's both things, you know. It's coaching and playing. It's coaching. Got to coach better, got to play
better. Coach
better,
got to play better. Certainly that's going to be important as they move forward here. And look, if they could get any sort of pass rush, I just wonder how much different the defense looks. How much better do you feel about the coverage? How much better does it feel out there if you're able to at least semi-consistently breathe on the quarterback, which they haven't been able to do yet? Again, I'll believe it when I see it. That's where I'm at with the pass rush at this point. But if some light bulb turns on and Clowney gets in the backfield, Vic Beasley plays more than, you know, 20 snaps in a game.
He did have 30 this week.
Oh, man, on the right track there. You know, you get some sort of positive momentum going in that direction. Maybe that ends up being the difference. I just don't think this defense has the tools to be a top 10 defense. We've had some people text in on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and talk about, hey, by the end of the year, this thing will be a top 10 defense when Nadori's back in there. I don't see this defense having the tools to get there. I will say, if it comes to where the pass rush is at least adequate, maybe you can get to middle of the pack. And with this offense, I think middle of the pack's all you got to do. Like, I don't think there's this huge ask like we've seen from the Titans defense in the past where you've just got to go out and shut people down. I don't think that's the way it is this year. So just get to a point where you're not a liability, and right now they're not there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's amazing to think about one year ago, when that defense, going back to the locker room, every game or all week, gosh, you guys are carrying this offense. How does it feel? Worst offense in the NFL, arguably, and a defense that was still keeping them in games, and now it's like completely flipped around. It's pretty amazing with a lot of the same players on both sides of the ball.
It is amazing, and maybe you'll get some help if you're the Titans starting, maybe as soon as this week. When we come back, we'll discuss what could getting Adoree Jackson and his speed do for this defense, particularly in the secondary. We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, Mike, after Adoree practiced all week last week, how close was he to playing yesterday? And, you know, I know it's only Monday, but are you optimistic about his chances about potentially playing this weekend?
Yeah, I wouldn't say, you know, too close or too far away, Eric. I think that it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't there. And so, you know, hopefully the extra week will give him an advantage to be able to be with us. We'll see how that goes throughout the week, you know, as where it looks like when we practice on Wednesday.
That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel yesterday talking about Adoree Jackson and maybe his potential availability for the game on Sunday against Cincinnati. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Joe, some good news last week for the Titans, Adoree Jackson returning to the practice field. We thought there was a decent chance he could play on Sunday against Pittsburgh. The Titans elected not to go that route. If he's able to go this Sunday against a Cincinnati team where you look at their record and you say, okay, they're not very good. That offense is actually pretty good. Joe Burrow is playing really well right now. They've got some weapons at receiver. T. Higgins has come in and has done a nice job. Boyd's done a nice job. They've got some weapons there. How much of a difference could getting Adoree Jackson back make for this group defensively?
No, I think a significant one. I don't think it automatically, like Floyd said earlier, it's, you know, don't expect one person to just fix everything. But you can do different things. You know, you can be more comfortable probably going man more often. And, you know, if you have Adoree and Butler on the outside, that's a pretty good combination. I know Malcolm Butler's not perfect, though. I can only remember, like, it was a big one. It was part of that drive that sucked up 8 minutes, didn't get points, but really put the Titans in a bind. He gave up a big third down on a little slant play. But
Who didn't?
Yeah, right. He didn't get picked on too much in that last game. You have Butler and Adoree out there, you feel pretty good about that. Now, if that's how you're going on the outside, what are you doing in the slot? You know, I mean, Christian Fulton's hurt now. You know, you got Chris Jackson, who's had the hamstring, the other rookie. That's probably what you're doing. So you're still, you know, the ideal group here is Butler, Jackson, Fulton, and you're not slow anywhere. and you're pretty fast two of the three spots with a good physical corner in Butler. And that's a, you know, with those safeties, that should be a pretty good secondary, you know. Get Adoree back for this week? Yeah. I mean, I think it instantly helps, and I'll be surprised if that's not the case. I was a little surprised he didn't play last week. Caution probably makes sense, right? I mean, you're coming off a knee. You've been on IR. But based on last week, without a setback, I would expect him to be out there Sunday.
I would too, but it is interesting. I mean, we talk about the speed element of the secondary. Maybe you get Adoree Jackson back, but losing Christian Fulton, you've lost some speed there as well. Paul Kaharsky reporting yesterday, Fulton could miss a few weeks with a knee injury. So you're getting Adoree back, hopefully, and that helps with the speed and certainly the experience, and I think just, quite frankly, the raw talent that Adoree Jackson has. They've been missing tremendously out there, but you're going up against a young receiving core that's got some speed in Cincinnati, and I think Christian Fulton, even though it's been a struggle at times for him so far, the speed element of his game, you will miss that on Sunday, and it's going to be interesting to see how they replace that. If Adoree's able to go, who do you put in the slot? Who matches up there? Is it Chris Jackson? Going to be really interesting to see how they go about doing that.
Yeah, you know, they went with Ty Smith. Ty Smith was kind of the surprise starter for Jonathan Joseph against the Steelers, and immediately Ben Roethlisberger said, okay, I'm throwing at 23. And look, it's a tough matchup for Ty Smith to deal with Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson is the guy no one talks about in that receiving core. He's really good.
He is. I mean,
Chase Claypool, did he do anything Sunday? I mean, not really.
Fumbled the ball.
Yeah. Right. Clowney
hit it.
There you go. Jadeveon Clowney making a play. I mean, Ty Smith was like an inch from at least getting a hand on that touchdown, but he didn't get there. So they bring back Joseph, and it's just the struggle of you probably feel as comfortable with him as anyone in terms of knowing what to do, and he makes some plays. But, yeah, there's just times when it's just obvious that he can't run with people. So then what do you do to hide that at times? If you don't have to hide anyone, you have that versatility. You can play whatever you want back there, and that makes a big difference. So, and this is, I mean, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, still A.J. Green too. In that receiving core.
Let me ask you this, because I thought about this in the third quarter of the game on Sunday, and I'm not sure if there's anything to this or not, but people talk about the play calling, and they talk about, you know, losing Dean Pease and how gifted he was at timing up what he's doing defensively. Well, a lot of why you can do that as a defensive coordinator is because you've got people out there that you can trust to execute and know what they're doing. There's been a lot of times this year where it's been Ty Smith out there or Chris Jackson or Christian Fulton, some younger guys, and not only some younger guys that did not have preseason, did not have an off-season training program on the field. How much of maybe they're not quite comfortable in exactly what they need to be doing out there do you think could be factoring into some struggles they've had in the secondary? Or are we too far into the season at this point where you think maybe that's not an issue?
That's kind of what I would think. I would hope so. But there are definitely some times before plays where, I don't know if it's confusion or arguing, but it looks like there's a little bit of frantic conversation going on among the DBs. I do think that's where Logan Ryan is really missed, for sure. You know, the safeties are kind of, those are the guys who are supposed to be, you know, kind of in command of that stuff. You know, the linebacker gets the overall defensive call. Safeties are out there. But Logan Ryan, I know that was a guy, I mean, Byard would talk about how he at times would really make a difference pre-snap too. So they don't have that. But, yeah, I guess maybe that's why all these defenses, I mean, you got, what, seven defenses at 50% or worse on third down?
Well, the reason I bring it up is because we heard so long about, you know, Dean Pease, what he asked you to do. You got to be pretty smart from a football perspective and have a good football IQ to be able to recognize and react to what he's asking you to do out there. My guess is, without knowing the X's and O's of their playbook defensively, I wouldn't imagine they've deviated too far from what they're doing. Like, I don't think Mike Vrabel and Shane Bowen have come in there and tried to reinvent the wheel.
No.
So if that's still the case, and there's some pretty, you know, advanced stuff that they're asking you to do out there, maybe they're not doing that as much as they normally would be under circumstances where you do have Logan Ryan and you do have some guys in the secondary that are more comfortable in that area. That's the reason I thought of it.
So basically you're saying, have they like you said, for sure, it's the same defense, the same system, same playbook, all that stuff. But you're saying maybe they've simplified things, dumbed things down.
Maybe
a little
they've
bit.
Had to.
Yeah, maybe. I guess possible. But and then maybe when you don't, you have the thing like you had against the Texans where you have a total miscommunication and blow coverage. Or maybe that's just a miscommunication and simply, yep. You know, one guy didn't get the call. You know, it's hard to know exactly how those things come about. I would think that they'd feel comfortable with doing most of the same stuff. But again, sometimes you're limited in using everything you have because of your personnel. And I think that's probably part of what we've seen. And, I mean, Dean Pease did just seem to have a knack for, you know, wow, look at that call and how it worked against that play. I mean, some of it's anticipation. It's a cat and mouse game all game long between the two coordinators and a guy who did it for so long at various levels. And you would think that over that time you would just have that instinct that you have to build.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, could the fix for the Titans defense be as simple as just getting Adoree back and Fulton on the field together at the same time, and then somebody in the defensive front getting some type of consistent pass rush?
Yeah, it's still to me more the second thing there. Yeah, I mean, Adoree will help a lot for sure. And it's why, you know, the cornerbacks are important in this league, but somebody get some pressure. I mean, Jeffrey Simmons wins a lot out there, and that should help other people. But is Rashawn Evans worth exploring as a guy to use more in that way? I mean, I think, you know, you get some point you got to try different things. Again, Derek Roberson to me is interesting. Is it two straight games he's been inactive? Yep. I believe so, and I believe he's healthy. Maybe he's not totally healthy, but that's a guy who definitely has some pass rush juice, some speed. You know, he's very much a pass rush only guy, but so is Vic Beasley, really.
Yeah.
I would think that they'd be trying different combinations here, you know, and trying different things because the same thing isn't working.
Well, let me ask you this. Based on what you've seen so far, who is the most likely one of those edge guys to get something going consistently? Do you think it's Clowney? I'm not even going to put Beasley in that conversation because he hasn't shown me anything at this point. Do you have more confidence in Landry or Clowney at this point? I would honestly say Landry from a pass rush standpoint.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I think Landry shows up more consistently as a pass rusher. You know, and Landry's he's a good player. And Landry's, I don't think, is going to be. I mean, you can't say anything like this for sure because people can develop. And sometimes they benefit so much from people around them too, which is what we thought was going to happen this year when you add Clowney and Beasley for Landry. But I don't think he's ever going to be a 12, you know, a double-digit sack guy. But he plays with great effort. He makes plays. So, yeah, I'd go there first. He plays a ton. They trust him a lot. You know, he's solid all the way around. I mean, Clowney's the guy who, to me, is at least we've seen, you know, there are times when you can see, yeah, that, you know, this guy's a load. It just – I don't know if it's the knee or he's just diminishing as a player overall. I don't know, but he has not been nearly as impactful as I thought he would be.
Well, and the interesting part is we talked last week about what happens if you get an injury on the offensive line, especially at the tackle position. One of these guys goes down. Like, what are you going to do? Like, we thought Clowney was hurt pretty bad the other day on Sunday. What do you do at that point? Like, Vic Beasley, you're not getting anything out of him. Harold Landry plays pretty much every snap. And you've been going with three outside linebackers pretty much in your lineup all year long. What right. do you do if one of those guys gets hurt?
Yeah, because your other guys, again, we just said it, Roberson and Beasley are really third down guys. So somebody's got to play on those other downs. Yeah, you would have been in trouble. I mean, I thought about Kamale Correa when he was limping off. Like, there's a guy who, you know, could be handy right now, a guy who played a ton in the playoffs and started next to Landry and did pretty well. And he's gone. So that's where, again, as we look at the trading deadline, I think OT is certainly worth a lot of exploring. But another outside linebacker / defensive end of some kind probably is also worth looking for right now.
When we come back, we will switch gears. A big game tonight for Nashville SC against Montreal with some playoff implications on the line. Nashville SC head coach Gary Smith will join us next to discuss that. This is coming up on Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. A huge matchup tonight for Nashville SC as they take on the Montreal Impact at 6 p.m. You can catch all the action on ESPN 94.9, starting with pregame coverage at 5:45. And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Nashville SC head coach Gary Smith. Gary, how's it going? Thanks for taking time to join us today.
No problem at all. I'm actually just on my way to the airport.
Very nice. So Gary, a big game, obviously, against Montreal. How much are you anticipating seeing what your team brings to the table in this game?
Well, as you said there, it's a big matchup with, you know, a position apart in the playoff spots, and Montreal will want to take advantage of being on their home turf, or what you could class as their home turf. I have to say, our guys, players are in a great shape, great frame of mind, and I think they're in a very good place to get this job done and really try and solidify not only a playoff spot, but maybe something that's a little bit more exciting.
So, Gary, what has come together here recently with the way your team is playing? I mean, what kinds of things have gotten better in your eyes to enable this push?
Well, there's probably numerous things across the course of this season that have helped the group form, a fibre and an inner strength, if you like. You know, all teams, whatever sport you're playing, have had to deal with adversity, and you know, we're no stranger to that. But I think as we've moved forward, the players have become more accustomed to one another's styles, appreciative of what each individual is about. And then, of course, on top of that, you find two or three players that really start to blossom and show, you know, maybe the type of top credentials that you really imagine they would. And I think one of those guys that's led the group and really underpinned the group for a large part of the season has been Walker Zimmerman. And Walker's not only giving tremendous defensive displays and helping the group to keep clean sheets and tough to beat, but he's also popping up at the other end now and scoring goals that are, you know, obviously adding to the board as well.
Nashville SC head coach Gary Smith on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Gary, I want to go back a little bit. The highlight reel goal scored by Daniel Rios, that took me out of my seat. It was incredible to watch. The skill level required for a goal like that was pretty insane. What can a goal like that do for a group on the pitch and on the sideline, even in the course of a game, in terms of bringing energy to your group?
Well, first of all, there's no doubt that the goal itself was fantastic. The build into it, I think, you know, there were a dozen more passes that led to that individual moment. It was actually the sixth goal in the space of two games. And I think that gave the group as much confidence and as much of a boost as anything. But Daniel himself had been out for two or three weeks with a slight groin problem. And he's still working his way back into full fitness. And to see the confidence and the belief in the individual at that moment was, again, you know, a real bright moment for the team. You know, goals have not always been easy to come by, but I feel as though we're rounding that corner, and the combination of real spirit and determination now with some good creativity and some goals is coming at the right time.
And that move, I assume, was a direct result of your coaching, Gary, right? I mean, you worked with Daniel on that particular move?
All down to me. I'll take all credit for that, absolutely.
Gary, you look at the players like Daniel and like Taylor Washington, many others that have come with you from USL and transitioned to the MLS. How much vindication and validation do you think that gives the organization themselves, that they were able to pick the right guys and bring them along, and that their game has transitioned well to the MLS level?
Recruitment in general has been fantastic, I have to say. You know, the choices are not just the caliber of a player, but the actual character of a player has been very, very good. And that has really underpinned how this group is growing and their identity. As far as the USL players go, you know, for me personally on the training field, having 3, 4, 5 players that I've worked with before, understand me, understand my personality and certainly where and how we've played before was important. It created a decent atmosphere and a decent vibe when the rest of the group joined. What has been outstanding with those guys, the way they've adapted, how they've grown with better players around them. And I saw a stat somewhere just last week that I think it's over 2,000 minutes that these guys from USL have played. And their involvement and their capability of time on the field has been tremendous. I couldn't be more complimentary as to how those guys have performed and what they've given.
Gary, I know a playoff spot alone would be a heck of an achievement, but potential here also to even have a home game in the playoffs, I believe. And what would that mean, and what has it been like to now have some fan presence recently at Nissan Stadium?
Well, first of all, the fans back in the ground have given the games back at Titans a real edge, if you like. I know that there's plenty of competition before that, but having fans around and just having that support and just understanding and getting that connection again has been terrific. As far as the playoffs go, you know, we've spent an awful long time, you know, working at and just mentally preparing for getting over that line. But what I would say is, you know, the attitude of the group now is, well, let's not look below us. Let's look above us. Let's see who we can chase down. And with a game in hand and in a very good position in those playoff spots, I think there's some very important matchups this week that we'll see that playoff group really shake out. And, you know, my hope is obviously we can get the job done tonight and we'll put ourselves in a fabulous spot to be maybe pushing for one of those home games. And that would be something special.
Gary, last thing for you here. Obviously, you guys, with everything that's been challenging about this year, have had to deal with things that no other expansion franchise in the history of sports really has had to deal with. How proud of you are you of your group that you've been able to navigate through all of this and put yourself in this spot heading into this game tonight against Montreal?
But there have been many times in this season that, you know, it would have been easy for the players and staff for that matter to, you know, to really just down tools and draw a line through what has been a very difficult, strange, upside down, however you want to describe this season. But I think it's credit to, again, the type of individuals and the personalities that we have from top to bottom in the organisation. You know, the players are seen on the field and they obviously represent what we're about as an organisation every weekend or every midweek as well, as we're seeing at the moment. And I think the calibre of those people, the way they go about their business, how they've conducted themselves and the quality of the group that we have, I am extremely proud. And I think I said from the outset, if we can build a group here that represent this city in the right way, then we're moving in the right direction. And quality is one thing, but calibre of an individual is something completely different. And these players at this moment in time are showing exactly what they're about.
Nashville SC head coach Gary Smith has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex. So Gary, thanks so much for taking time to join us. We really appreciate it, and good luck tonight against Montreal.
Absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. It really is incredible what they've had to go through this year and all the different challenges of navigating through, you know, the tornadoes. You get your first game here against Atlanta United, and it's sold-out stadium. It's a great environment. You think this is a great spot to really build on this and start to build this fan base forward, and then the tornadoes happen and COVID happens and you're shut down. The MLS return to play tournament happens. you can't play in that one. I mean, it's just a whole lot of different things they've had to go through this year. And to be in a position where they could let alone make the playoffs, but even have a chance to play a home playoff game is pretty remarkable in an expansion season.
Yeah, and, you know, they've scored 7 goals in their past 3 matches. Yep. So they're peaking right now and having fun. And, look, it's 1 goal, and I know there's a bigger picture, but, like, they have a highlight, too, of the season to kind of, you know, to
I'm still very upset at SportsCenter that did not make the top 10.
Yeah, and there were like 6 soccer plays.
There were 6 soccer plays in the top 10, and Daniel Rios' goal against FC Dallas wasn't one of them.
And 4 of those were –
like, did you not see it?
Right. 4 of those were like from the same game.
That's what –
it was a bad night at ESPN.
It's like the top 10 guy watched 1 soccer game and was like, oh, there were about 5 plays in this one that looked great. He kicked the ball.
Yeah.
How about it?
I don't think I'll go – yeah, I don't have time to check out the baseball. Just take this whole soccer game. Yeah, that should have been high on the list. But it's one of those plays that – I mean, that's going to be replayed, you know, a lot for over and over again. It was, and it's cool to have a moment like that to kind of tie to a season.
It is, and I tell you what, we talked about earlier in the year some excitement, generating some excitement if you're Nashville SC. They've been better offensively as of late, and I think that's really helped. And anytime you win, this is exactly what the Predators went through too. Once you start winning, the fan base grows and grows and grows. And all of a sudden, you've got some pretty special things that you're cooking with. So the fact that they've been able to do this in their first year is pretty remarkable. When we come back, you always got to be careful what you're putting on your hands. A Dallas Cowboys coach learned that the hard way yesterday. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune into this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. This Sunday's NFL game is an NFC West matchup as the San Francisco 49ers take on Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. with a 3:25 p.m. kickoff. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And, Joe, you've always got to be careful about what you put on your fingers. Sometimes it sticks around, you rub your eye, and it could cause some problems. Dallas Cowboys defensive coordinator Mike Nolan found that out the hard way yesterday in his press conference with the media. Here's what happened yesterday with defensive coordinator Mike Nolan from the Cowboys.
He's been active every week, as far as, I think, disrupting the quarterback. He's escaped several times to do that. Obviously, the frustration for him as well, it's just, you know, look, when he misses them, nobody, whoops, excuse me, I got something in my eye. Just had some Tabasco on my finger and it went in my eye. That wasn't good. Oh.
Never good.
It's terrible. Jeez. I'm sorry.
Hang on, guys. I'll be right back.
Give me 1 second.
All right, we're back. Jory, I guess.
Forgive me, I'm sorry. And I don't remember the question. If you give it to me again.
Oh, boy. Mike Nolan, defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys, got some Tabasco sauce on his hand. I guess rubbed it in his eye, and you could see the tears starting to flow. Much like Dallas Cowboys fans when they watch his defense this year, the tears were just flowing. It was really bad for yesterday for Mike Nolan.
That kind of year for the Cowboys. I've been there, though. I've been there, Mike Nolan. We've all been there, right? Those of us who like spicy food.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever put in Tabasco sauce in my eyes.
Yeah, I don't know about Tabasco, but I've definitely had spicy, like, wings, you know, and you, yeah, it can get you.
The quote at the end, my eyes feel a lot better, but it was burning. That's the best part. I love that. And they're on pace to give up 555 points this year. It was just very interesting, very kind of Mike Nolan to provide a visual illustration of what it's like to watch his defense this year. It's just rough.
Yeah, yeah. That's just one more thing for the Cowboys here.
That's the most heat the Cowboys have had all year.
Oh,
okay.
Ooh, boy.
There you go.
That's good.
Yeah.
A lot of Cowboys fans want to see them play with more fire.
Oh, man.
You were ready for this, Porth.
Porth's got his dad joke generator out right now, and he's just firing away.
I appreciate those.
Seriously, like, is he going to get fired? Like, is that whole coaching staff, the first year they're there, going to get fired?
Nah.
You don't think so?
No, I mean.
What if they go, like, 3-13, which very well could happen?
Well, I mean, I guess you can't rule anything out for Jerry, right? You got, I guess Jerry is, he's loose cannon enough to do something like that, but, I mean, you lost your quarterback.
Their season kind of went up in flames after the Prescott injury.
Oh, here we go.
Jeez.
Keep it going.
He's rolling them out there.
but their D is bad. I mean, their D is way worse than it should be.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate text in, cutting jalapenos, banana peppers, or any hot pepper is the worst thing to put on your hands. Even after you wash the hands, the sensation is still there on your fingers, and you can mess up your face or other parts of the body you shouldn't touch with hot hands.
Yeah, I mean, I've with habanero peppers, which...
Done some damage?
Those are, yeah, nothing like, but I've had them around the hands after, you know, cutting them. Whew.
Yeah, coaches are going to, like, adopt this, and, like, you know, Vrabel's going to leave a Zoom presser early because he's going to be like, I had some hot sauce on my finger. I got to go. See you guys.
Got to cut the peppers better. Got to eat the peppers better.
The video of that is so funny because the first, like, 10 seconds, he's answering a question, but he's rubbing his eye.
Yeah.
And he continues to rub his eye on Zoom as he's answering the
making
question.
Making it worse.
And you could tell there's, yes, like, there's, like, a moment in there where he figures out, oh, man, I have made a mistake.
It's terrible. Yeah. Jeez.
That's it was that moment.
Yeah. Like you know, like he's like, oh, buddy, this is going to end very poorly. Like, what did he do when he got up? Is like, did he go to the sink and like wash his eye out? Like, what happened?
I don't know.
Somebody should have followed him in there.
That's the, you know, that's the limitations of Zoom, man, you know? But you sometimes water, you got to, you know, with heat stuff, sometimes, you know, it's like bread or something to like
milk.
To absorb it.
Imagine pouring milk in your eye. Sounds pleasant.
Yeah, sounds good. Of all the calamities the Cowboys have had this year, that's not high on the list, but it's
illustrative.
One. Yeah.
It's very illustrative where they're at. Did I make that word up? Is that a word? Illustrative?
I think it is. No, that's a word.
Oh, buddy.
All right. I learned this weekend that if you burn your hand, if you put mustard on your hand right away, it will take away a lot of the heat, and it will keep you from getting a blister.
Is that a real thing?
Yes, according to one Chase McCabe.
No kidding. Is that the source?
Yes.
We're going to need a better source than that.
No, Chase McCabe is a great source for that.
Really?
Yes.
I have not heard that one. I don't know if you guys have done the mustard to stop hiccups thing, though.
No.
Okay.
Is mustard like some... Should I just go dive in a pit of mustard?
It helps, especially if you hate mustard, but it has worked for me, and I like mustard. If you have the hiccups and you can't get rid of them conventionally, take a huge spoonful of mustard and pound it.
Really?
Yep. Because basically your whole body will shudder in, you know, not agony, but, you know, it'll kind of reset you.
Yeah.
It has worked for me. It has worked for others, too.
Do you think this is
a
real thing, or is this like a placebo effect kind of thing where you think it works?
I think it's a little more than a placebo effect. I think it's like if it hits you just right, it will kind of jar it out of you. But, yeah, it's not science either. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like take two aspirin and call me in the morning. But it's worked for me. I've seen it work for other people too.
Mustard cure COVID?
Has anybody tried?
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm
apparently
sure
it's got some healing powers.
I'm sure it's been involved in some sort of steroid pack, you know, experimental thing.
Maybe Heinz can come up with a vaccine.
Yeah, maybe.
Hey, the more the merrier to get on that.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a text that says mustard is indeed the real deal. It works. So we have
saying
we have,
for what? For the burn or for the hiccups?
For both.
For everything.
Yeah, okay. Like it's the real deal. So that's confirmation. I needed
James Neal.
I love Chase. Wow. I love Chase. I needed more confirmation than Chase McCabe from his medical expertise.
Well, now you have the anonymous texter.
I know. So that's my confirmation.
No name on that?
No name.
Okay.
That's okay though. I trust
him. I still believe that person.
Yeah, I trust him too. Some interesting stuff yesterday in the SEC as well. Lane Kiffin, it was another bad look for the SEC on Saturday in the Ole Miss game against Auburn. And how Auburn continues to benefit from some of these calls, I don't know. They really should be, 1-4 maybe? Maybe 0-5. I'll give them 1-4. They should be 1-4.
Yeah, you don't know how the games are going to end up. But, yeah, They could.
Well,
be.
I know how that Arkansas game was going to end up.
The Arkansas game,
I know
for
exactly
sure.
How that's
that's one directly. That's the outcome. Yeah, they still could have won the Kentucky or this game, but yeah, I mean they're certainly getting a lot of help. That's for sure.
So Lane Kiffin retweeted something yesterday that basically was critical of SEC officiating, and he held a press conference talking about how he had a conference call with the SEC, and they explained what happened to him on the kickoff where it touched the Auburn player, and they never went back and reviewed it, which was a big controversial moment from the game on Saturday. Lane Kiffin retweets basically a tweet last night saying that the SEC officiating is garbage or something like that, and he gets fined. He gets fined $25,000 from the SEC, and then goes on to tweet about like a video of a dude holding a wheelbarrow full of pennies to come in and pay a fine somewhere. And first off, his math is just fantastic on this. He said, anybody know how to like get where I can get 25,000 pennies? Like 25,000 pennies,
yeah, you need a little
is the same
more
as $25,000. He then corrected it to 250,000 pennies, which is still wrong. And then he went to 2.5 million pennies. So that,
really, so he kept
going. So like that.
Did he have separate tweets for this?
He did. So that's like that Ole Miss math coming in handy there.
Man, well, listen. First of all, he said after the game that they told him it was briefly reviewed.
Yeah.
And then later they said, no, we actually didn't review it. So right there, whatever his fine is, there better be a way bigger fine for the officiating crew who botched this. And also, it's just so ridiculous by the SEC. First of all, they get him for retweeting someone. And they ended up acknowledging, you know, that they messed up. And he basically said, you wouldn't believe what they told me was the explanation, but I can't say it.
Yeah, and that's the, I guess, the stipulation the SEC puts on the call is, hey, this is not for public consumption. And then the SEC officiating account last night comes out with a tweet about Kiffin being fined and then releases a statement on the mistake they made. How about instead of worrying about fining people for criticizing your officials publicly, why don't you fix the officiating? It's been atrocious this year.
We don't have nearly the time to get into this. I could take an hour on this. This is a huge problem in that the SEC, or all of these, in especially in college football, I mean, I think it could be better in the NFL too. You know, public accountability for officials is, to me, a necessity, and they hide behind this stuff. We don't know who – they won't even tell us. They suspend crews and they won't tell us. Why not? Let us know and let them answer questions. Why don't they answer questions of media? Sometimes you get a pool reporter. But I think that's total BS. They should answer questions after games and tell us their job. They control outcomes of games with a call or two.
Yeah.
All the time.
And people always throw out the excuse of you never lose a game because of officiating. There's five or six
garbage.
Other plays that you could point to in a game. Sure, if we want to get technical, whatever. I can point to you a game this year. Arkansas lost a game because of officiating to Auburn.
Like every it's like, well, we don't want to make the excuse. We could have done this and this, and that's fine. You don't want to lean on that, or you don't want to hear your opponent say that's why they you beat them. But yeah, they absolutely determine outcomes of games. And let me tell you something: if you think officials, we already know this to be true, but if you think officials aren't targets for people in this world, you're out of your mind, and they need to be paid more. They need to be held more accountable. And this, we've seen this in basketball with the SEC. A couple years ago with Tennessee, embarrassing, man. Accountability and all this stuff has to get better. And here's another example. And I'm glad we have Lane Kiffin to rattle the cages a little bit.
Me too. Lane Kiffin, love that guy at Ole Miss.
Joey Freshwater
coming in clutch. Once again, Christopher on Twitter tweets in, please, please, please dive in a pit of mustard. I might do it. Apparently, it's got healing powers. I'm going to do it. Where can I find this pit of mustard?
I got to see
this. Do I have to create it?
Why?
Next time you get hit by allergy season,
just dive in.
Just dive into a big old bowl of Heinz mustard.
Apparently. I mean,
it'll take a little bit more of a bowl for me to get in there, but yeah.
I knew it.
Bathtub?
Yeah. That's a lot of mustard.
How many bottles of mustard would that take to fill up a bathtub?
A lot.
And then
I hesitate to think about it.
Would you? Is it like a bubble bath? Is like you use like some Dijon? You know, you get a little fancy.
High class mustard bath.
Yeah, that's right.
Be really
pass
good
the gray poupon, please.
Yes, please do that. When we come back, we're going to switch gears. We'll get into a bit of a state of the union of the Tennessee football program. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com on ESPN 102.5 The Game.